Our speaker today is Doug Traverson. Doug is the minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church in Oklahoma. He completed his seminary studies at Meadville Lombard Theological School in Chicago. Doug is a retired Air Force officer, and he and his wife, Jancy, live in Tullahoma. Doug will speak today on the importance of being uncertain. Let's welcome our speaker, Doug Traverson.
There's a bumper sticker I like. I saw a while back. I've never actually purchased it, but it would be ideal for my car. And you can probably get it in t-shirt and coffee mug form at this point because you can print almost anything. But it says this, militant agnostic. I don't know and neither do you. Now, if you don't know what agnostic means, it just means someone who doesn't have knowledge, someone who isn't making an absolute claim to knowing something. Well, one of our congregation's members shared a story with me that starts to open up this idea of not being absolutely certain about things. She was a member of a homeschooling group, and although traditionally homeschooling groups have been predominantly filled with Christians, almost every child in our church is also homeschooled. So the Unitarian Universalists' influences are slowly creeping in. And she was sharing with one of the mothers, you know, what our church was like and how you... And she wasn't pulling any punches. Yeah, we have people from all these different perspectives. So you might have pagans and Christians and atheists all together. And then after we have our service, we get together and we get in a circle and we talk. And this woman's eyes got wide and she said, how do you keep from fighting? And that is the big question, and we're going to answer that today, because it all comes back to this idea of being certain. And when you're certain that you're right, then you've got to correct everybody else. And that leads to the arguments and the fighting. So how do we keep from getting into arguments at our church? Or at this congregation here? There are probably as many different answers as there are people who are attending here. But after the many years of being involved with Unitarian Universalism, I have my answer, and I'm going to share that with you. I don't get into arguments because I don't care what you believe. That sounds really harsh, doesn't it? And it's not supposed to, but there's... How do you sugarcoat that? I don't care what you believe. I care how you live and how you interact with me. And I think most of us really, when we think about it, probably agree to a large degree with that. Now, if you had absolute truth and you were compelled to share that absolute truth, you wouldn't say that. Because if your absolute truth required that everyone believe the way you do, or horrible things would happen to them, then you can't make that statement, I don't care what you believe. But for me, that's not the underlying issue. Your beliefs, whatever they might be, whether you believe in a deity or deities or not, whether you follow the flying spaghetti monster or not, what matters is, how do you live your life? How do you show compassion to each other? How do you care about each other? That is the critical question. So I can get together with people from all these different perspectives, and it doesn't bother me if they don't see the world the way I do. In fact, ideally, I'm going to have my mind open a little bit at least and listen, and maybe I'll learn something that helps me. See, I don't worry about the beliefs because if someone is hateful, even if they agree with me, I still don't want to be around them. So whether you're a hateful atheist or a hateful Christian or a hateful pagan or whatever it is that's causing you to hate others, you're going to be equally unpleasant to me and probably to you too. No one wants to be around, well, I won't say no one, there's always exceptions, but most people don't really like to be around others who are just filled with hate and looking for reasons to hate all the time. And we've probably all known someone or know someone now who's like that. And you probably don't seek them out a whole lot, because it's just really hard. If what you believe is causing you to be a hater, or to tone that down, if what you believe compels you to try to convert me, to make me think differently, I have no desire to be in your company. I don't find a lot of this in Unitarian Universalism. I just don't remember a single instance where someone came up to me and said, "You have to believe the way I do." Now, there are people who have strong points of views on things, but generally, they give you space and don't really say, "You have to be just like me or think like me." If someone is like that, the conversations are going to be unpleasant and probably very uninteresting, because if someone's just talking at you all the time and you're not sharing ideas, that's not a lot of fun either. So one of the root causes of all this unpleasantness, the thing that comes between people that makes this open conversation impossible, is the curse of certainty. And that's why this is entitled "The Importance of Being Uncertain." Over the last few months, if you follow the news at all, you've seen some great examples of certainty causing great harm and pain, and sometimes just crazy levels of absurdity. We've probably all heard the story of the Kentucky County Clerk, Kim Davis, who refused to issue marriage licenses, even though the Supreme Court said she had to, and all her legal challenges and appeals were turned down. She just felt that it was horrible that two men or two women should be allowed to get married. And because she was so absolutely certain on this point, she was willing to prevent anyone from getting a marriage license. And then she was willing to go to jail and become a celebrity because she was so certain she was right. Absolutely certain. And because of this, she lives a life where her beliefs trump her responsibility to do her job and her obligations to other citizens who think differently, who live differently, and who don't share her views. Now, my belief is that she was and is wrong. The courts have ruled thus. The drama continues, because whenever a politician can get a little extra airtime by supporting her, they will. So it's not the last we've heard of it. But imagine if you lived in that county and all you wanted was to get a marriage license, and you had to put up with this nonsense because someone was absolutely certain. On a more frightening level, we see the atrocities that are carried out by groups like ISIS, executions, slavery, and I kid you not, rape as a form of worship, destruction of ancient ruins, the list goes on and on. They are so certain that they have the justification for all their actions based on their understanding of their scriptures that they can apparently do all these horrible things with a clear conscience. Dr. Christopher Driscoll is a professor of religion and Africana studies at Lehigh University. He wrote an article that I'm going to quote from a few times today. It's called "Uncertain Humanism and the Waters of Whiteness" in the July-August issue of the Humanist magazine. In it, he examines the Black Lives Matter movement and is asking humanists if Black Lives Matter to them. Or is modern humanism also mired in unconscious racism? Now, that's not the topic of today's sermon, but because I'm going to be quoting from this article, I felt it was important to tell you the context that he's talking in, even though I think it is applicable on a much larger basis. And his quotes are so good, I'm going to be using them today to talk about certainty. But I wanted to give you that original context. In fact, I could have taken right from his article a great title, "Certainty Kills." That could have been the title of this sermon. But I didn't want to be a plagiarist, even if I acknowledged it, so I made up my own. But that would work. This is a quote from his article. "Certainty kills, and it kills," and please listen, because it might apply to us too. "Certainty kills because it has to pretend. There is no actual certainty available to humans, only the means of faking a certain identity that tries to conceal all of the myriad intellectual and social uncertainties that mark human life. Think about that. If you are claiming to be absolutely certain on something that you really have to be uncertain about, something you can't have certainty in, you are faking. You might be deceiving yourself. You're certainly putting on a false front for others. In the case of ISIS, certainty literally kills. In the case of conservative religious fundamentalists in our country, certainty kills in many ways. First, on the extreme end of the spectrum, there are actually people who advocate execution or incarceration for gay people. They are a tiny minority, but they do exist. I have seen it with my own eyes. I've read the writings. These people actually walk the face of the earth. It's hard to believe, but they're out there. But certainty also kills in other ways. It kills common sense. Kim Davis cannot see how strange her behavior seems because she's surrounded by people who support what she's doing. And the very notion that her behavior seems not only unfair, but outright bizarre, doesn't occur to her because she doesn't get that kind of input because she's absolutely certain. And those who disagree with her are inspired by the devil or terribly deluded. And so we've got another quote for you from David Foster Wallace, who writes, "Concerning certainty, there's the whole matter of arrogance. True, there are plenty of religious people who seem arrogant and certain of their interpretations, too. They're probably, and before we get too smug, he's about to slam the atheists, too. They're probably even more repulsive than atheists, at least to most of us. But the religious dogmatist problem is exactly the same as the unbeliever's, blind certainty. A closed-mindedness that amounts to an imprisonment so total that the prisoner doesn't even know he's locked up. When you're totally certain about something and close your mind, you imprison yourself and don't even realize it." That's his argument. Certainty is not just a pitfall for believers. Now, admittedly, Wallace falls into this familiar trap of suggesting that atheists are certain there's no God of any sort. And that's a great error, and it's a misunderstanding. I've never encountered a phrase that gets so much pushback, even from Unitarian Universalists as atheists. Even when I gave this talk at my church, there's still this one guy who refuses to settle on the fact that I call myself an atheist. I have to be an agnostic. I can't be an atheist, because an atheist knows there is no God. I said, no, I don't know there is no God. I don't believe there is. There could be. But I don't live my life on that basis. That's what an atheist is. And even Richard Dawkins, one of the most famous atheists, has said time and again, I don't know with absolute certainty there's not a God. You know, there's a slight chance, but I don't see an interaction here on earth with one. And so that's all they're saying. And so if there are atheists who speak with absolute certainty as a theist or a believer of any sort speaks with absolute certainty, they've all fallen into the same trap. That you are claiming to know something absolutely that you can't really know absolutely. And thus you have imprisoned yourself. So, most people need to live their lives based on what they conceive of, what they acknowledge to be a belief, as opposed to a certainty. And most people do. But those who claim an absolute certainty end up like Kim Davis, refusing to acknowledge that they could be wrong, and the consequences don't matter. The harm caused to others doesn't matter. They are imprisoned and they don't even know it. Certainty can imprison anyone. Driscoll, who is a humanist, urges humanists to determine the direction our humanism is oriented towards certainty, security, and facts. And this is a great line, so I'm going to emphasize it. Are we oriented towards certainty, security, and facts, or are we oriented towards uncertainty, compassion, and attention to the limits of what is possible as humans and as humanists? Now, I can take those words and apply them to other people besides humanists, even though that's the context he's writing. What is the direction your belief is oriented in? Be you a Christian or a Buddhist or a pagan or an atheist or a Unitarian Universalist? Are we obsessed with certainty and security? Or do we focus on uncertainty, compassion, and our human limits? Can we acknowledge that there is so much we don't know and cannot know because of our human limitations? Can we acknowledge that? Can we be that honest? Can we embrace uncertainty and build a congregation around uncertainty? I think that's what we've attempted to do in Tullahoma. And after we have our discussion here, you can give me your feedback and let me know if you feel that's what's going on here, too. Uncertainty is not a bad word. It's not something to be afraid of. It's something to be acknowledged as part of the human condition, and it is to be embraced. And that comes back to the question at the beginning of the sermon. How do we keep from fighting? Here's how. We acknowledge the limits of our knowledge and the limits of what we can know. Two, we avoid absolute certainty and allow others to find meaning in ways that might be different from our own. Indeed, almost certainly are different from our own. Three, we don't impose our ways on others because we know all too well that even in the things we cherish most and hold most dear, we could be wrong. Holy words. We could be wrong. I could be wrong. I could be massively, alarmingly, life-alteringly wrong. In fact, I have been. I've lived this life. I've been Kim Davis. And look at where I am now. We listen to others, respecting their paths, being open to learning new things. Perhaps one day we will adopt some of these ideas. Certainty might cause us not to listen. So it's better to be uncertain. Uncertainty is also a desirable characteristic in our lives because it can help us not to lock onto single-minded opposition to things we should be open-minded about. Again, Driscoll gives an example from a humanistic, non-theistic perspective. As humanists, too many of us seem preoccupied with fighting against the God idea, when at the end of the day, in a multiverse, where, and now he's going to give you a theoretical what if on another alternate Earth, in a multiverse where there is no God or gods, and there really is no such thing as an atheist, and there's no such thing as a theist. So imagine that alternate world where gods have never existed, so these words don't even mean anything. In this world, and I quote, there are only people who make meaning based on what they worship in the face of what they have been told and conditioned to worship. So even if you eliminate gods from the picture, people are still going to worship something. There's some kind of a thing inside of us that makes us try to find something deeply meaningful. And if we're not focusing it on gods or goddesses or deities, it's going to be something else. That's his point anyway. We live in a universe where there's no God. Everyone agrees there's no God. There's no such words as atheists and theists. What then? People still have to make meaning. There's that drive to find meaning. Even if there isn't any, there's a drive to find it, to try to make it. And whether there is meaning or not is one of those things that it's best to be uncertain about. So I humbly submit to you. Our culture, our social circles, our families, our friends, our media would still be attempting to guide and mold us and give us values, even if there were no gods. In the face of this, each individual will decide what to worship or what to value most. Rather than spending so much time arguing against something, understand that you still have a lot of work to do determining what it is you are arguing for. What is it you value? What is it you worship? It's hard to do this if you spend all your time arguing against something, rather than exploring the infinite possibilities that this universe has to offer us. And I understand all too well how easy it is to focus on the negative. Like I said, I used to be like Kim Davis. I used to have that absolute certainty. And now that I've come out of that, I see the dangers. And it would be so easy every week for me to rail against this. So many things I see in the news every week that sends chills down my spine. But if I came in and just did negative every time I spoke, that would get really old really fast. But sometimes I do have to do it. And today is one of those times to some degree, because I am arguing against certainty, because I've seen how certainty can harm. And as often happens as I'm writing the sermon, current events pop up, or I get an article via Facebook, which is the greatest sermon writing tool in the history of the universe. So all you bad mouthers and haters of Facebook. Oh, Frank. So it's a couple things came up that I could incorporate. The first one was, of course, Kim Davis, and I've talked about her. But here's the thing. I'm pretty certain she really believes that what she's doing is right. She's not just showboating. She really thinks she's pleasing God. I think that's a fair statement. She sees herself in a battle against the forces of darkness led by a literal Satan, and they are seeking to destroy this nation. And she willingly allows herself to be jailed and to be made a spectacle of and be mocked because she is certain this is what God wants her to do. She refuses to do the job the government expects her to do. She refuses to compromise, even though we live in a multicultural, multi-ethnic, multi-religious society, and you have to compromise to make such a society function. She refuses to do it because compromise isn't part of her theology. Her stands, carried to their logical conclusion, would make America, as it exists today, impossible. And it would lead to a rupturing of our nation into a multitude of factions. And we see this time and again right now in our world, in other countries, where this very thing is happening. And people are fighting and dying. Certainty kills, literally. So I fight that kind of negativity in my mind because I see what it can do. I try not to let it come out in my sermons all the time, but today it does because it is a danger. Sometimes, because the threat to our freedoms and our religious liberty is real and not imagined, we do have to stand in the way of the very religious conservatives who think they're fighting for religious freedom. There's so much irony in that, you could cut it with a knife. It's just amazing that both sides are fighting for religious liberty and can't see how the other side might be wrong. It's a tough one because they think they're doing the right thing. Kim Davis thinks she's doing the right thing. She thinks she's standing for religious liberty. And from the outside, we're saying, how can you possibly say that? You're fighting against it. You're trying to establish a theocracy. It's a tough thing. The religious conservatives in our country feel that Christians are under attack, but they don't pause and consider the attacks on the couples who are trying to get marriage licenses, be they gay or straight. Anyone who wants to get married is now under attack, or was under attack. Now they're issuing the licenses again. And so, because Mike Huckabee, one of the Republican candidates, was making a big show of being with her and supporting her, I thought, well, surely all the candidates don't feel this way. So I did a little research, and there were two candidates who very much, very clearly said, no, she needs to do her job and quit. Two of the, 18,000 Republican candidates. And so that was Lindsey Graham and Fiorina. Those two came out and said that clearly. A couple more sort of waffled because they didn't really want to come out one way or the other. But that was amazing to me that only two would say, do your job. And that's become a meme, by the way, on Facebook. Where it'll show someone who hates doing something but still does their job, and there's 1,000 variations on that now. Mike Huckabee, on the other hand, went so far as to say, Mike, having Kim Davis in federal custody removes all doubt of the criminalization of Christianity in this country, which no doubt comes as a... a real quote, which no doubt comes as a surprise to the millions of Christians who have continued to attend church and practice their religion despite the fact it's now a criminal activity. As nutty as Mike Huckabee has become in his desperate attempts to get media coverage, I'm feeling a tiny bit embarrassed for him. But what should scare you is not Mike Huckabee. What should scare you is the fact that only two of the Republican candidates of one of the two parties that has a realistic chance of having a president elected, one of the two only had two out of whatever it was, 18 or something, they're dropping out now. Only two said, if you work for the government, you set your religion aside because you're serving the people. Only two. That's what should scare you. I can only hope that these people are all posturing for the hard right voters as they have to during the primaries and don't really believe that the government officials can refuse to do their job claiming a religious exemption. Imagine clerks refusing on legal basis the fact that they would issue to you a gun license, a driver's license, or registering women to vote. All of these things are opposed by some people's religious convictions. That would be madness to try to run a country that way. Certainty kills. The other thing that came up while I was working on this was a film that's put out by HBO called Going Clear. It's based on a book by the same title, and it's a superb expose of the Church of Scientology, a truly frightening organization that seems mainly focused on bilking its followers out of all their money. And this is according to numerous high-ranking ex-officials who appeared openly in the film, not behind a screen, not in shadow, name, face. They came out and said it. But really struck me is it how time and again these people being interviewed said they couldn't believe how stupid they had been, and they admitted that they were stupid. They used those words. They had never read anything critical of the church. Even when they were confronted with the mind-blowing science fiction backstory that you only get after you've been in there for many years and spent lots and lots of money, when they reveal to you the secret documents that tell you the history of humanity, which it really reads like a bad science fiction novel, they still pressed on. When they were told that formless alien entities called Thetans, which were exiled here by an evil galactic overlord, possess your body and you have to fight against them, they still pressed on and believed. They had invested time and money, they'd be separated from family and friends, the cost of critical thought and skepticism was now too high. And they continued to allow themselves to be duped. And they had to accept these strange teachings as certain truth. Certainty kills. One mark of any cult is a powerful leader who is not questioned. If, as you go out and seek truth and meaning in your lives, you encounter anyone with those characteristics, run away. Anything you hold dear should be questioned by you on a regular basis. And if your particular religious leader or philosophical leader doesn't allow you to ask hard questions and doesn't treat them with respect and doesn't mock, and if they mock you for daring to ask, you don't need to be listening to that person. Because that's the mark of a cult leader, not the mark of a good mentor who's going to help you. You should not take anything I say as certain truth, nor should you feel that way about anyone who stands here and speaks. I'm giving you my insights and my understandings as I have them today, and they will no doubt evolve continuously. That is the natural outcome of belonging to a free religion that embraces free inquiry and encourages free thinking. It is also absolutely necessary for the people of a country such as ours to be allowed and encouraged to think for themselves. Along with this freedom comes the equally great responsibility to ensure that others are also free. Therefore, our government must be secular, which simply means neutral towards religion, not against religion. The government needs to be free from religious entanglements. And when government employees or politicians seek to undermine our government by allying with one religion over all others, our freedoms are indeed under attack. So taking a principled stance of uncertainty on issues with which we cannot honestly speak with certainty is a moral imperative, and I say this very seriously. Taking a stance of uncertainty is a moral imperative if it's something you can't really know. So if you're going to say with absolute certainty, I know that X is a sin, and yet you know in your mind, well, that's my opinion. Don't go around pretending it's a fact. I know there is a God. Well, you may believe very strongly there is and hope there is and have a relationship, and that's fine. But when you demand that others believe because you know this to be true, and conversely, if you're an atheist and you go around telling people, I know there is no God, you're not allowing other people space and you're not allowing that you might be wrong. So I would encourage you to take a more honest, I would say, stance of uncertainty. You will live your life based on a certain belief or direction. That's fine. That's expected. But allow others the space to go a different way. I might indeed choose a particular path, and it might be meaningful for me, but how dare I claim absolute certainty that this is the only path that's pleasing to God or the only path that's good for humanity? Such arrogance, such hubris when you say such a thing. What we need are leaders, religious and secular and governmental, who stop acting like they know best, and those who disagree are evil or stupid. Uncertainty and humility should be virtues preached as such throughout this land. Less demands of unthinking faith and more praise of uncertainty from our pulpits would help our society immensely. For the sake of our community, our congregation, and our world, I would encourage you all to be militant agnostics. Thank you.